Welcome back to another episode of the Alchemist Lounge. And as always, I'm your host, Alex Atwood. And folks, you know, mental health is like an invisible thread that weaves through every part of our lives. And it often goes unnoticed until it starts to unravel. Well, today we're diving into mental well-being in the hospitality industry with Chris Hall. Chris is the founder and mastermind behind the Burnt Chef Project. And the Burnt Chef Project, which was featured on Gordon Ramsay's Boiling Point, has a mission to give light to the need for mental health awareness, specifically in the hospitality industry. So today we're going to peel back the layers of Chris's journey. We're going to feel into the pulse of what he's doing and the impact of it, and discover a little bit about how he's rewriting the story of mental health in the hospitality industry. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, what a mastermind. What a great introduction. I've never been called a mastermind before. Many things, yeah. But not that.
Well, mastermind sounds very grandiose in a way, and yet it explains exactly what it is that you're doing, because you're creating something that really hasn't been addressed before. And so it needs a mastermind in order to get it done. You know, what's really interesting to me, and the first time I heard about the Burnt Chef Project, I assumed that you were a chef that was burnt, and that was where this came from. But when we talked a bit, I learned that this actually came from a photography campaign, which is all that much more interesting. So can you share a little bit about the photography campaign and what it was that moved you to start the Burnt Chef Project?
Yeah, for sure. I was so confident. Oh, obviously you're a chef, right? Like, you can understand how chefs work. So you must have been a chef. I'm like, no, you put me into a kitchen and I swear I would crumble. The first ticket that comes through, I am done. There's no way I'd be able to do some of the incredible things that these culinarians can do. So a bit of background. My background has actually been in multiple different sectors. So I've worked in the insurance industry for financial companies. I've run financial protection modules for travel companies. I've worked in Stag and Hen companies selling Stag and Hen do's. You know, I've done a lot of different jobs, but it's always been in sales and marketing. And I've always had like side hustles working in bars, especially down on the south coast of England. There's a place called Bournemouth, and it's got like 9 miles of beautiful coast. Unreal. You know, they've got the Jurassic Coast where all the dinosaur bones are found. And so we've got a great nightlife down there. And I used to work in bars after a 9-to-5 job and bloody loved it. It was fun. I looked forward to earning money. Like, it was just great. And so I'd never really worked in full-time hospitality until, God, I must have been in my mid-20s. And I took a job as a sales rep selling fine dining ingredients to chefs in the south of England. And, I'm not ashamed to say, you know, I'm close to 40 now. I was a cocky salesperson, thought I knew everything. And I walked into this kitchen and I was like, all right, chef, where are you to? Like, I've got some bits for you. Let's have a chat. And you could just see people looking up from their stations. Like, you know, like those films, like Chicken Run. I don't know if you've seen Chicken Run.
Of course.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, when the animals are scared and they look up and they go, no, don't do it. And all of these team members are looking up with fear in their eyes. And I was like, oh, what's going on here? Uh-oh. What's happened? What have I just walked into? And the chef comes around the corner. They're like, what the F are you doing in my kitchen during service? Get the F out. Who the hell do you think you are? I was like, whoa, what the hell is this? And I went back to the office with my tail between my legs. I said, God, I've just met the worst bloke in my life. Like, he shouted at me. He manhandled me out the kitchen. I said, well, what time did you go in? And I went, 1 o'clock. Like, 1 o'clock. And they were like, Chris, like, you can't do that, man. Like, this is hospitality. This isn't some, like, you know, you're not selling TVs and hi-fis or stag dudes anymore. But at that moment, I just fell in love with this industry. I just fell in love with how passionate and how structured the industry ran and how creative and diverse it was. And I thought, do you know what? I'm not going to get caught out like that again. I'm going to make it my mission to understand what people want, how seasons and how ingredients work. And I became a bit of a food geek, and I ended up running sales teams for food wholesalers for 10 years. So to get to the point of the photography is I experienced quite severe mental illness when I was in my late 20s, and it'd been something I'd been dragging around since I was 17, 18 years old, a real, real identity crisis. Like, fuck, you could tell me that I once invented iMacs or Apple computers and I would have believed you, or I would have even said to you, yeah, I completely agree, because I didn't have a backbone. I didn't have any like station in life to be able to disagree with you. I was like, oh yeah, okay, that sounds like that's something I could do. And I had this real, real identity crisis. And it wasn't until I found a job where I was managing a sales team. I was driving a really nice BMW 5 Series. I was earning decent money. I had a decent life. And my boss was trying to empower me to make decisions and go, trust your gut instinct. And I was like, what's my gut instinct? How does it work? And he's like, you know, when you feel something's not right, it's not right and you shouldn't do it. And I went, that's really fucked me up. And over time, as he was trying to empower me to be more of a courageous leader and to like not deal with people if you didn't like them and all this sort of stuff, it was going against everything that I'd ever thought, which was be a chameleon, don't rock the boat, just get on in life. And it sent me sideways. It sent me really, really into myself. And I lost myself for quite a few years. And it wasn't until I ended up seeking therapy out of desperation and getting support and going on my own recovery journey that I started looking back at hospitality and going, I wonder how many other people are like locked in mental illness or thought processes that are going on behind the eyes that you just don't know about. Because I genuinely thought I was the only person on the planet who had an internal negative monologue that was just constantly telling me I was shit and I was an awful person and that I wasn't capable of anything. And the therapist sort of chuckled at me and she was like, I've not been sat here waiting for you for like 26 years for you to walk in and go, hey, you know, gathering dust in the corner of this room. And so I thought, how can I do this in an industry where there is a lot of pride, there is ego, there is machoism, there is fast-paced, high-adrenaline environments. How can I do this without people putting their hands up in an uncomfortable situation and going, yeah, I'm unwell and I need help? And so the photography kicked in. And, you know, it was so fucking difficult to get that first chef to have that photo, a mate of mine. He was like, mate, that's a great photo, black and white. I love the way that half the face is shaded, like really moody. Yeah, that's really cool. I'm gonna put that on my social media. And I went, brilliant, excellent. Yeah, put it in. And they said, what's it for? I said, it's to raise awareness for the fact that we've all got mental health and that the sooner we start talking about it, the better we'll all be. He was like, fuck, don't put that anywhere. Like, if you do that, my job's over. Game over. I can't work in this industry again if I say that I've got mental health. I said, everyone's got mental health, mate. Everyone. He was like, yeah, but even if I mention the word mental health, I'm going to be in some shit. Anyway, I posted it. Then people started asking me, are you that guy who takes photos to talk about that thing that we don't talk about? It's like, yeah. Can you come in during service? It's like, during service? They're like, yeah, during service, and take some photos in our storeroom. Or I've got a few other team members as well who want to have their photo taken. And then they would start telling me their stories. One-on-one, head behind the camera. Oh, I tried to end my life. Or I've been divorced 3 times. Or I struggle with alcohol. Or I sometimes have really dark thoughts and I don't know what to do with them. And I was like, fuck, this isn't just me. This is a massive thing. And the sooner that we try and get people to talk about it, the better. And that's all it was. The Burnt Chef Project was just a series of, it was meant to be 6 photos. It's now a couple of hundred, just to raise awareness in a small little town on the south coast of England.
Wow. You know, listening to that, a couple of things strike me right away is that you were successful in terms of career trajectory, it sounded like, in sales and marketing. So you had some sort of core competency, something that allowed you to be able to manage a team and be able to grow over 10 years. And yet that grounding, that, you know, ability to be able to create boundaries didn't sound like it existed. So, you know, people on this career trajectory where they're finding that, well, in the sort of matrix of, you know, social structures, I'm doing pretty well here, right? I'm moving up. Or in the case of a chef, hey, you know, I've gone from just working on sauces and as an assistant sous, now suddenly I'm a sous, now suddenly I'm being considered as the head of the kitchen. So sometimes those are the only guiding light. And your story reflects on how there was such a massive thing missing during that entire process that you woke up to through another person or just through sort of seeing what was happening out there and reflecting back on it. Was there a moment in terms of like what it sounds like was a lot of emotionality and a lot of like clarity when you started to hear the stories and see the photographs? Was there a moment when things sort of clicked and, you know, the grounding started to happen in terms of what you've embarked on now?
It's a good question. Like, I used to be, say for context, I used to be that individual who never, I was a data guy, right? I was very blind to, use ghosts. If I couldn't prove it, couldn't see it, didn't exist. It's, you know, I had to see it, or data or science had to prove it was there. The big defining moment for me was going through my recovery journey and building myself back together again, building my core values, establishing who I was as a person. I learned that actually sometimes it wasn't about what I was thinking. It was about how I was feeling and starting to listen to that intuition and that gut and these non-tangible things that you couldn't even put, you can't put any data towards any of this stuff. And I noticed that doors started to open up and conversations started to be sparked and people just felt your energy. They felt you were open and you gravitated towards people. And so I was driving down the road one day and I proverbially had a poke in my back that said, Chris, you need to do a talk. This was such a surreal moment. So I pull over at the side of the road and I go on Eventbrite and I publish a date and I quickly text a mate of mine and said, look, can I borrow your restaurant? He said, what for? I said, are you shut on a Monday? He went, yeah. I said, I'm going to do a talk. I'm going to do a talk about mental health. He said, what are you going to say? I said, I've got no idea. I just know I need to do one. And if 10 people come, 10 people come. So we get to the evening and I've invited my friends and my family and a couple of people who I know wouldn't let me down. And I've been told by other people, you know, people just need to man up and get on with it. They need to stop being such pussies and you know, don't have these sort of conversations. And I get there in the evening and people start to arrive and it was a 36 seat restaurant. And before you know it, we had 66 people crammed,
wow,
absolutely smashed into this restaurant. And we had even those individuals who previously told me, you know, just man up, like don't even go into the subject matter. They had also turned up as well. And they were like, let's see what this is about. And after that evening, I sat down with my boss at the time for the food horse area. He said, I had no idea you were doing any of this stuff. He said, you know, fair play. He's a religious man and he does quite a lot for charity. He said, you know, but this is a big task and you work for me and you hit your targets. He said, just let someone else take this on. Someone else can do this. And it was at that moment then something just grabbed hold of my gut and said, nah, I'm going to do this. This is going to be me. And I've got no idea what this is, but there is an issue here and someone needs to do something about it. So that was what? October 2019. And then COVID hit in March and I just plowed all of my I was doing 80-hour weeks during COVID just on the Burnt Chef project, making sure that people knew who we were, making sure that things like the merchandise we'd start selling to try and raise awareness and funds was traveling well, and we started then popping up all over the globe. We weren't just in Bournemouth anymore. We were London, Edinburgh, Cornwall. Then the exec chef of the Tokyo embassy pops up over in Japan and is like, I've just bought one of your Fuck Stigma t-shirts. And then Colorado and then South Africa. Like, hosting weekly talks to people from all around the globe who are like, we need this. And I was like, I don't even know what this is. They were like, just keep going, keep going. And that's all it's been. It's been one tiny step in front of the other, gut instinct the entire way. Like, I've made some howling decisions, but all of it has just been like, it feels like the right thing to do, so let's go with it. And if it's wrong, then on my head be it.
Wow. You know, that is the journey into the unknown. And you know, in, you know, deep inside you, that this path is one that is the right path. And it's something that's absolutely necessary. And when I first heard about the Burnt Chef Project, I can't remember who it was, but I heard about it from a few people within the industry, just inquiring about, hey, is there anything out there for the industry around mental health or just sort of general well-being? There's a push in all industries, as far as I've seen, to start to become more emotionally focused in terms of leadership. I've had quite a few interviews with leaders in all sorts of industries, including some tangential hospitality industries that have been pushing that. But I haven't seen something so specific in terms of providing actual training, actual access to be able to work on mental health and destigmatize what you're saying and what you've experienced, because I've experienced the exact same thing. And you know, when you see a chef or a team in a kitchen or in the front of the house that are there to really constantly be in service to to host people as they come in for, you know, all sorts of events that are special in their lives, or even if it's just a dinner out. And so they devote their, you know, their everything to making that happen. Mm. And they often just, you know, step over themselves. So I'm curious, like, now that you've been doing this and you've chosen this profession where, like, it's a demand for constant service, there's a demand for, you know, always being at your top because that's the expectation. So how have you been able to allow for the Burnt Chef Project to support the people that are providing that service?
Very, very good question. There is no singular answer as well. So we're a globally recognized social enterprise now, or an NGO. And the model has been built off of, well, originally the model was very simple. I went out and took the photos, and then I suggested to everyone, they just did four working days a week, problem solved. There we go. Bish, bash, bosh. Everyone's happy and healthy. until you then get started contacting by people who are going, I'm already doing 4 hours, 4 days a week, but I'm doing 80 hours. Or we're a mom and pop restaurant, and if we put people on 4 days, we've lost $30,000 a year and we're no longer solvent. And you go, fuck.
Right.
Right. So if that's not the answer, what is? And so everything that we offer, it was so blind. Honestly, if anyone's listening to this right now, if anyone's listening to this and you have an idea or you have a gut feeling or there's something that you think you should be doing, don't worry about how you're going to get there. Honestly, do not worry. Just persevere. Just put one front in front of the other. And I had no idea. I didn't even know that I could get paid to run a not-for-profit. I didn't even know how to set a not-for-profit up. I didn't know how to build a website. I didn't know how to talk. I'm not mental health trained. I'm not a psychologist or a doctor. I'm like, and now I'm being hailed as a mental health expert and a stress reduction coach. And I've never studied a doctorate. I wouldn't ever devalue anyone who has. But know that you can work things out. You can move through them. So for us now, like in the UK, we offer a 24-hour text-based support service. So the way that I've built this project is I've built it around supporting those first and foremost, supporting those at the ground level, getting them the help that they need, getting them a way of opening up dialogue. So in the UK, we've got a 24-hour text-based support service. We've also globally got a therapeutic service that provides pre-screening and a therapist in less than 10 minutes, and that's available in 9 different languages. Now, admittedly, wow. That isn't a free service. That's a B2B service, but we're seeing recovery rates of mental illness of that 86%. So it's really doing some damage out there in terms of good damage, not bad damage. This is all very well and good, but what happens if you get someone who's now recovered from mental illness and they get back into the workplace and their leader hasn't spoken to them in 4 days and they don't have a clear job description and they're not getting paid right and they haven't had a review and they might be getting bullied or shouted or screamed at? Then all of a sudden, the mental health issue isn't the problem. It's the environment that's causing some of those issues in the first place. So then we started looking at education and how do we start to tackle not just the stigma associated with mental illness, but how do we get to the root causes of some of the things that are causing mental illness to happen in the first place? And so we launched our e-learning academy, which has 22 modules to do with menopause, suicide, bullying, diversity and inclusion, you name it. And we've provided it for free to over 78 countries worldwide. I think last year we had about 14,500 modules completed. This year I'm hoping that we've smashed that total. So we've looked at the support, we've looked at the awareness, we've looked at the education. And then the next challenge that we came up against was C-suite. It's important to me. It's important to the community that we speak to, the thousands of individuals that we speak to. How do we make it important for the business owners now to actually start investing into this? Because it's, you know, it's the right thing to do, but also it's got business sense. So we work with universities and organizational psychologies specifically on research and data. We do a lot of work on case studies so that when we work with people, we're not just saying work with us because it's the cuddly feely thing to do. Work with us because you wouldn't hesitate to spend $12,000 on a new oven to save yourself $1,000 in energy a year. But when I ask you to spend £400 on a person to make £2,000 back or $2,000 back, you're telling me no. Can we just stop for a second and think about this and think about actually that the sooner you preserve the energy use of your workforce and the health and the well-being and reduce your retention or your turnover rates, the sooner you can have a more successful business and you can retire and fucking do whatever you want to do. But yeah. So we now... there's no excuse anymore. We have the leadership apprenticeships or diplomas across the globe. We have the supportive systems. We have the free to access systems. You don't even need to pay us any money for half the stuff that we do. We have the merchandise brand that just gets in there and it gets people talking and raises funds. And yet we're still hit with new challenges. You know, we're still hit with teaching business owners to manage cash flow and forecasting and energy crises and, you know, trying to actually work with the hospitality industry to improve its PR brand and say to people, it's a fucking great industry to work in. It's really cool and really fun. And I'd work behind a bar in a second if the opportunity arose. But it's encouraging that future generation to take on the mantle now and actually start to run with this. And, you know, four years in, it's been a hell of a journey, but we've still got a good 30, 40 years worth of work left to do, I think, at least.
Yeah. I mean, just in what you're describing to me, I see that what started out as a simple task of a 4-day work week turned into revamping, reshaping an entire industry. You know, when you describe to me what it is that you're doing, I see that firstly, just giving access. Where do I go when I have something to talk about that I don't have necessarily anyone I feel safe talking to in my work environment, family environment, you know, there. So that alone, massively impactful. But integrating that support and that safety into the workplace comes with another set of challenges. And I don't see the first operating without the other, to your point, right? Because, you know, you can go into a safe environment and speak to those who are there to listen and feel better about that. And then you walk right into an environment that prioritizes everything except for that. And suddenly you go back to all of those old triggers and all of those old stresses and all those old activities. So, you know, the interesting thing is hospitality is known for providing an experience of either sophistication or joy or celebration. People rely on hospitality to be there when they have some of their most, you know, monumental experiences of their lives. And so those behind that, specifically the leaders and the CEOs and the C-suite, they must feel an enormous amount of pressure and anxiety and burden to be at the top of those organizations and having to see the landscape from such a wide and broad perspective. I believe this sort of work, if the executives and the sort of leadership folks aren't already doing this work for themselves, then that would be absolutely something that I would invite them to do. And then once they are in a position where they see that this not only improves what they do and how they show up at work, but how they show up around their entire lives and frankly, the quality of their lives, then I believe that they will give these types of access to their teams and support. Like, you know, I talked to lots of executives and lots of C-suite folks and find that more often than not, their priorities are to things outside of themselves, right? And I think that it's more of a mind shift change that, hey, you know, as the leaders of your organization, once you experience this, you're going to understand why it's so valuable for everyone down the line and all around you to experience it and have them sort of evangelize that. But sometimes those are some of the hardest folks to get through to because of the amount of pressure they have, you know? So it's just so necessary. Like as you're telling me, I'm thinking, well, you know, if you're going to have a team of people show up at their best and be genuinely happy to serve you and be genuinely happy to want to be there with you and make your day and your experience the greatest it can be, well, those folks have to be able to take care of themselves in order to do that. And they have to feel genuinely in that space, right? Mm. And that prevents burnout, staffing shortages. It brings more good energy and positive energy to every environment that you're in. So it makes sense to me. What are you finding? Like, what are the biggest challenges you're running into when you're wanting to share this with people?
I think, so there's professional challenges that I find externally and also personal challenges that I find internally. And I'd like to speak about both of them if I can, because, you know,
please.
A big misconception is that being, and I use quote unquote, it makes me feel uncomfortable to, I don't think that I struggle with imposter syndrome, but when people call me expert, I'm like, I don't deserve that. I've not taken any academic study in this. It's just experience, I guess. But from a personal level, it's really fucking difficult. It's really hard. Yeah. Like the vision is very clear. The vision and the I can see it as clear as day, exactly the stage that we need to get to and how we get there. And it's really frustrating being an individual who, and I've never been like this before, it's only the Burnt Chef project that's made me like this really, is that I can see the potential and I can see what needs to be done in order to get there. And I can't control time. I can't fast forward 10 years into the future and have 700 case studies and people go, my God, I need to emulate that. That's incredible. How do we do that? It's unfortunate. It's a long old game. And that takes its toll. It takes its toll on you mentally. It takes a toll on your ego. And then unfortunately, the larger you grow, the more people want to try and tear it down who don't necessarily share your vision. And so it's tough managing. I think discipline personally is one of the hardest things that I struggle with, is that actually you give so much of yourself to help other people that sometimes or quite often you forget to help yourself until it's too late. And we talk about burnout. And you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I'm languishing at this moment in time. It's been one hell of a year, 7 different countries. We've launched in Sydney and Toronto and you know, we've helped thousands and we've developed, you know, critical incident cover to provide therapists around the globe if someone experiences a traumatic incident. You know, this all has been done within the last 12 months. And I felt like an absolute hero at the time, but now I don't feel like a hero. I feel like a small boy and I feel so tired. And I now need to inspire a team of 26 to carry on the work whilst also feeling that. So I think the first thing from a personal challenge is that you've got to put that discipline in place and you've got to make sure that you model the behaviors that you expect other people to run. Mm. But psychology is a fucking warped thing. You know, your brain will tell you that you're the superhuman. You can wear your pants on the outside of your trousers and fly around in the sky. Just because other people don't think you can do it. You're special. And your brain will automatically default into that way of thinking, unfortunately. But it's about the sooner you become more self-aware and identify those thought processes, the sooner you can start. Or you've got a family member who says, you're a dick. You've not eaten for 3 days, or you've not showered, or you've not spent any time with us. You need to sort your life out. So personally, it doesn't come without cost. From a professional level, some of the hurdles, I think, you know, in reality, the hospitality industry has been built. A good friend of mine, Jim Taylor, or a good friend of ours, Jim Taylor, has often said it's been built on low profits, high volume. And he's right. You know, if you look at the people who own most hospitality businesses, they've either never had a business in their life, or they've had an idea and they're following their gut instinct, and good on them. But I often joke that the Burnt Chef Project should have been called That's Just the Way Things Are, which I often get chuckles from people. And this is terrible branding. Yeah. It wouldn't have fit on a t-shirt very well, but I think,
right.
You know, I might actually, again, gut instinct kicks in. That's it. I'm going to do a t-shirt. That's just the way things are. But the thing is that we only learn by being pioneers and developing and taking new routes, right? We only change by going down that track that hasn't been traveled. And rather than keep spending time pulling people out of the water and going, oh, God, this is really tiring, and why are we doing this? Let's go up the stream and find where the bridge is broken and repair the fucking thing. That's the key thing. Mm. And so business owners need to start looking at, actually, how do I run a sustainable business that focuses on one of the greatest assets, which are people? And how do I keep hold of those people? And how do I ensure that they have the right level of balance and support and education in order to be able to maximize their performance and their efficiency, whilst also still being a great place to work? At the moment, that pyramid is the wrong way round, and we go, COVID's changed it a little bit. You know, we've been forced into change, but we're still an industry that goes, we've got far too many demands to make far too little profit. And so we expect more of people. We expect them to do more with a lot less. And that model is broken. It's flawed. You know, people do not have exponential energy. They do not have the same mental health or physical health as everyone else. And so I think that now operators, and the challenge is getting people to understand that ROI doesn't mean that you're going to see it back next week. An extra 50 covers tonight means that you got an extra 50 covers in the bank tomorrow. Nice and easy, sorted. But when we're talking about ROI and people and culture, you might spend £50 today, but you might not see that return for 6, 12, 18 months. And that is the financial and fiscal education that we're really trying to work hard with businesses, and being like, it's going to sting your pocket now. It's going to hurt. And the chances are, the more time you spend on this, the more actually absenteeism rates and people will start to take time off sick, because you're allowing them that freedom and that space to do so. But you're not spending $4,000 a time trying to re-recruit and to train and to find someone else again. And that there is that secret to success, is keep those people, keep them engaged, keep them happy. And that's a tough sell. It's a tough sell, because there aren't really that many people that have done it to be able to go, see, look, it does work. And that's our job now. It's moving into 2024, is how do we promote those organizations and individuals who are the pioneers?
Yeah. Well, from a perspective of what, you know, lots of business owners want, which is teams that are resilient, people that stick with them. Most of the small business owners that I've worked with, including myself, have always found, you know, one or two key people that you just can't run the business without. And many times those one or two key people in the business, you tend to take care of, because it just feels natural. Hey, you know, so-and-so is just really getting it all done, whether they're staying late, whether they're coming in early, whatever that looks like. And a lot of the times, as a business owner, specifically a small business owner, you tend to think, well, I'm going to give so-and-so a bonus, right? I'm going to make sure he or she's taken care of this year, because they've done such a great job. But you're missing what might be happening in their lives that you may not have any purview to. And if you imagine that, imagine that all of your employees could potentially be that person. Everyone you hire could potentially be that key employee, and keeping them there for something outside of a paycheck, something outside of just a monetary incentive, will change the fundamental way that your business is viewed by everyone that works there, because you actually care about it, you know? And to your point, some people don't see that, because especially small business, hey, look, I gotta pay all these costs. I have to pay rent. I have to pay food costs, right? I gotta get covers tonight so I can pay, you know, make sure I can keep this business running. Oh yeah. Yeah, we get that. And I would just invite those out there to remember that their employees, the people that are doing this for them, are really the heart of their business. And so taking care of them is important. But I'll go back to, you know, taking care of yourself, right? I'm listening to you as a business owner, learning, navigating much the same journey that someone who might be opening a restaurant for the first time after working as a chef. They have no idea what they're doing a lot of the times. They have no idea everything that goes into opening a business. It's not just about making sure the hamburgers and the steak is cooked to the right temperature and the sauces are where they need to be. There's so much more, right? So now that you're here, right, in a position that I'm sure a lot of people that are you know, in successful businesses are in, and suddenly in need of burnout, what are you doing right now? Or what is it that you want to put in place, perhaps if you're not doing it right now, to be able to take on what seems to be a massive 2024 with all the traction that you made in 2023?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. So I've put in place some tangible steps. I guess one of the beauties of being in this particular field is that, and also having been through therapy and discovered myself and rebuilt myself only within the last 10 years or so, is that I would say I've got a good deal of self-awareness. I'm quite aware of thought processes, emotions. Doesn't mean I can always control them, because I'm still a human being, and I think that's one of the critical things. But I'm quite self-aware. So I've spotted and identified some of the key signs that I need to be wary of when it comes down to burnout. And I've taken a bit of my own medicine, and I've sort of spoken to myself as like, right, I've just come to you, Chris, and I've said, I'm having these issues. I'm not sleeping at night. I'm not looking after my health. I'm not going down the gym, or, you know, I don't really connect with my family. What would you do? And so Chris has spoken to Chris, and I've gone, well, that's not right. No work should ever allow you, make you feel like that. So have you considered taking some time off? So at the moment in my diary, I have no appointments booked in. I'm actually out of office, even currently. I'm out of office for the next 4 weeks. And now that doesn't necessarily mean I'm out of office, but I'm not working. But I have dropped my pace down, and it means I'm not taking on any new commitments. And I'm actually starting to respect my personal time and my personal boundaries. And it means that, you know, I have in the last 3 weeks, I've been going back down the gym, and my God, I feel 100 times better for it, but I'm still not quite, you know, still not quite there. Or I can spend some time with my family, you know, especially as it's coming up to break. So that's one thing I've been doing. Monitoring water intake. You know, there's a really interesting study that I read that said that if you're 2%, I think 2% dehydrated, your cognitive ability starts to suffer and you start to get really foggy, right? But actually, when you're 3% dehydrated, your lips go dry. So it means you're already beyond the point of optimal performance before the fact that you realize it from a physical point of view. And that's just a small percent. Can you imagine if you're not drinking enough water throughout the course of the day, or you haven't drunk any water for days, you're just drinking caffeine? Yeah. Then you're in some difficulty, you know?
Yeah. So many people go through that.
Man, honestly, it's just small things. The way that I talk about health and well-being and purpose and you know, mental health especially, is that just imagine we're not sat at the desk. Imagine we're not sat on a computer speaking across different continents. Imagine that we don't have cars. We don't even have tarmac. We are 60,000 years ago, dragging a stick around, poking things and chasing down woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers, right? Mm-hmm. Our biology and physiology was designed at a time where we didn't have much self-awareness, and it was designed to keep us alive. It was designed that we had to eat regularly. Mm-hmm. We had to fast every so often, or we didn't have a choice. We had to be safe. We had to reproduce. And everything else was just abstract. There wasn't really anything else in life. And, you know, we've developed massively as a civilization, as a culture, but physiologically and biologically, we're exactly the same. So if we want to get back to that stage of where we can start looking at health, let's break it down into our innate needs. Am I secure? Am I eating right? Am I getting enough exercise? As creatures, as animals, we're migratory. So am I moving regularly? Am I going for walks? Am I jogging? Am I swimming? Am I exercising? Because sedentary lifestyle is not good for you. And I'm detoxing from digital technology because our brains weren't designed to handle digital technology. Our brains have been coerced into using it, and brilliantly so. So when I think about what structures I need to put back into place, that's how I think. And that almost that caveman or cave person mentality. And it doesn't mean to say I'm ripping shreds out of cows, or, you know, I've not gone fully meat or fully vegan or whatever it might be, but just be mindful that actually as creatures, our innate state is a lot more simpler than it is currently. And the sooner we get back to that, and the sooner you build that as a discipline and a structure, the more likely you are to be able to be back on an even keel.
What a beautiful way to end the interview. Just keep it simple. Pay attention to the simple things. Pay attention to your body. Pay attention to your water intake. At the end of the day, your mental and physical well-being are what keeps everything together. And so thank you for that. That's a beautiful way to wrap up this incredible interview. Chris Hall, founder, mastermind behind the Burn Chef Project. I want to acknowledge you for what you've done and how many lives that you've changed and how much access you've given to a topic that, as you said, was simply not discussed because of some sort of fear around weakness or some sort of fear around other considerations that are just not valid. So I see this, that you started lighting a fire that really takes hold over the next few years. So I'm glad you're taking these 4 weeks off. We got to do that for each other. Please take your time, because your energy source and what you're doing is absolutely necessary in this industry. And I can't thank you enough. And I want to bring you back on the show. I want to be able to not be a continent away and meet in person, hopefully somewhere here in the United States coming up soon. But first, take it easy. Take care of your mental well-being. And thank you for all you do, Chris.
Cheers, man. Thanks for having me.